This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. We will begin this hour with a story of information and content that is less about adorable little monsters and fishies than huge multi-billion-dollar behemoths trying to get bigger, merge, and own the pipeline, the internet cable, telephone, every information door and window into your life. We're talking about Time Warner and Comcast.
I think the transaction is a lot less scary. It's a lot less large and a lot less complicated than some people would like to make it. This is not a horizontal deal. We don't compete with Time Warner Cable anywhere. There isn't a consumer in America who has a choice between buying Comcast products or Time Warner Cable products. And at the end of the day, we're going to have under 30% of the market. So not particularly scary.
That's Comcast Executive Vice President David Cohen on C-SPAN last month. Today, Comcast, the largest cable company in America, will go before the Senate Judiciary Committee to defend its desire to purchase the second largest cable company in America, Time Warner Cable, for $45 billion. Do the math. Largest cable company plus the second largest cable company equals another largest cable company, dwarfing everybody else, which infuriates David Carr, media and culture columnist for our partner, The New York Times, who has been banging the drum about this proposed merger for quite a while. Welcome, David.
Hi, John.
So Comcast, Time Warner Cable, this is a business story. Why are you bothering with it?
Because it's very big business, and we're talking about something that is really deeply embedded in consumers' lives. It isn't really about cable. It's about the internet, and the internet is sort of like your water faucet or your electrical outlet. You expect to turn it on and have it work.
And this is a no place to hide kind of merger here, that once this takes place, wherever you live, how you get your internet, how you get your television, how you get your communications, your connection to the outside world is really going to be determined by a very few companies?
Well, I think that's sort of been the case already. The argument that consumer advocates are making is that it's going to further centralize what had been a limited array of choices in terms of where you get your internet from. Comcast would argue that, well, we got DirecTV, we got Dish, but they can't provide you a hardwired connection to the internet, which is what most American consumers and businesses care about.
And Time Warner can do that.
Time Warner, Comcast, by some measures, their wire will go by 70% of American homes. They will be providing 40% of the broadband in America and 30% of the cable.
And it simplifies everything. One person to call for all these services. It reduces the customer service waiting times if you got a problem.
I can hear Comcast and Time Warner Cable customers just laughing as you say that.
No, and I say that tongue in cheek, but that is their argument. The idea that it simplifies to have a more consolidated company. They don't necessarily compete. That's what David Cohen has already told us, Time Warner and Comcast. Bringing them together just makes it more efficient.
I think Mr. Cohen would argue that this is a time of fast evolving business models on the internet, and that a company like his needs scale to compete, that the amount of investment it takes. They're in a very expensive business. They have stuff underground, overhead, and all that infrastructure takes a lot of money, and that this scale will give them the money they need to invest to compete with what they say is Apple, Amazon, Netflix, a whole new cohort of companies that are in their space providing video.
Aren't they onto something here in that Netflix competes very directly with the networks? Hulu competes with the networks. YouTube is gearing up to compete with the networks. Amazon is gearing up to compete with the networks.
Yeah, they've got something to say about that. But in the instance of Comcast, you have somebody that controls both the pipes and to some degree what goes in them. Don't forget that they own NBC Universal, so they not only come to your house with the cable, but they're the ones that give you community for better or worse, the TV show or even a theme park. So they're everywhere. What people like Apple and Netflix would argue, and they would do it quietly because they're really afraid of angering Comcast, is that they're controlling the intersect with the consumer. They're the ones who are going to have the skin on your television that's going to decide whether you can watch Netflix in a reliable way, whether you can get Apple's devices authenticated on your television. They worry that they're going to have market power to kind of squeeze off and determine who can come across the bridge.
All right. So let's encapsulate a lot of what you've said in a quote that you wrote in the New York Times recently. This is in February. For consumers, cable is not just television anymore. You've said that. It's where the internet comes from. Should this deal go through, more people who want to cut the cable cord will still have to buy their broadband from a cable company where prices go only one way up. Well, David Cohen had this to say about your statement in February on C-SPAN last month.
A lot of respect for David Carr, but a lot of mistakes in that statement. So, first of all, in terms of buying broadband today, consumers are going to have the same choices after this transaction as they had before this transaction. The implication of that particular theory is that somehow this transaction is going to reduce choice for the purchase of broadband. That is just not true at all. Number two, according to the FCC, 93% of Americans have access to broadband, to wireline broadband today, and 97% of them have a choice of at least two broadband providers. So it's not a single choice market, again, as Mr. Carr represents.
David Cohen, Comcast Executive Vice President, on message there, talking about David Carr, our guest from the New York Times. You want to take any of that?
Well, I think his argument on pricing sort of goes over the windmill and through the clown's mouth to arrive at the same conclusion I did, which is prices are not going down. And Mr. Cohen has said that himself. If this deal is going to result in such savings and such economies of scale, how about showing the consumer a little sugar? How about we get to dip our beak in too? I mean, it puts a lot of market power in the hands of a single provider, and the alternatives that he mentioned are in many instances far inferior. And there's a concern that as big as they get bigger and bigger, that the innovation of the next Netflix, the next generation of internet provider, won't be allowed to flourish.
All right, but there's also an argument here that maybe this goes back to the common carrier argument that, you know, the phone company dealt with. Maybe we want them to consolidate, become a big target, one company doing all of this, and then we'll put a fence around them, get the FCC, as David Cohen even alluded to there, get the FCC to regulate them, and then we'll have a secure access to the internet. That's where we should go, not stopping this merger.
Well, there are a lot of people that argue that the internet should come from one provider, that it should be treated like a public utility rather than a private good, and that maybe there is an argument for centralization, but it shouldn't be in the hands of a single company.
Finally, David Carr, you know, working for some might call it a media monopoly, the New York Times, huge sort of
how are we monopoly.
Well, you're a huge player in the print
We've
space.
We've got a market cap of $2 billion.
Right,
we're a little baby next to these guys.
You're a little baby, but nevertheless, you have a gigantic brand. You know, what if the argument was to break up the New York Times here? What if the argument was to, reduce the New York Times' influence on content?
Delivered to my door this morning, I still have them in front of me now, is Wall Street Journal's here, the Star Ledger is here, New York Times is here, New York Post is here. And that's before I even open up my computer. And I can go anywhere I want and look at any information that I want. We like to think that we have something of a monopoly on a certain kind of excellent branded content, but that's really up to the consumer. They can decide.
And that level of diversity at your doorstep right now, do you think that's really going to change if this merger goes through?
You know, to Comcast's credit, they did a very good job when they bought NBC Universal of living up to what they said they would do, of adopting the strictures of net neutrality, of following through on the commitments. And part of the reason they're going to have a good hearing of their issues in Washington is that they've been of good faith in their negotiations with regulators. But even if you adopt the precept of so-called net neutrality, meaning all content is created equal, there still are intermediate steps to be taken. Like for a while, my Netflix wasn't working very well, and Netflix had to come to a commercial arrangement to buy a certain kind of access from Comcast to make sure that their technology worked when I turned it on.
So who do you get cable service from right now, David Carr?
That's interesting you would raise that, John, because I'm a Verizon customer, which means I'm on fiber optic. And I have to tell you, it's an amazing, amazing technology. I've had it for 4 years. I've never had a single service call. My previous relationship was with Comcast, and they were here all the time. Unfortunately, most Americans are not going to be able to get Verizon because Verizon decided, for their own reasons, I guess, that they weren't going to compete side by side with Comcast.
David Carr, media and culture columnist for our partner, our oft-times partner, the New York Times. David, thanks so much.
Pleasure to speak, John.